was enough troops. We didn't have enough presence there. I don't believe anyone seriously doubted we would be successful militarily. But I do think that the administration thought that it would be a somewhat easier task after the military action to topple Saddam was over to stabilize the country and create some kind of transition government. There have been a lot of mistakes made on the planning and many decisions that really overlooked the considered opinion of people who had a lot of knowledge about Iraq and the region.
From the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. A burst of violence against Americans in Iraq on Wednesday made March the second deadliest month for U.S. troops since George W. Bush declared an end to combat last May. Five U.S. troops and four American civilians were killed on the final day of the month, just over a year after American forces launched the invasion to topple Saddam Hussein's government. At least 48 troops died in Iraq during March, up from 21 in February and 46 in January. 19 were killed by roadside bombs or improvised explosive devices, according to military records. George W. Bush expressed disappointment on Wednesday at OPEC's oil output cut and pressed allies inside and outside the cartel to fill any gap in supply to prevent higher prices after Democratic rival John Kerry accused Bush of ignoring record pump prices. While initially raising no public objections to OPEC's decision, the White House later voiced its displeasure at the production cut. Bush's timid reaction to OPEC stands at odds with his 2000 campaign promise to take on OPEC on behalf of American consumers. At the time, spokesman Scott McClellan said rising gas prices were a sign of failed leadership. The Washington Post reports that on September 11, 2001, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was scheduled to outline a Bush administration policy that would address the threats and problems of today and the day after, not the world of yesterday, but the focus was largely on missile defense, not terrorism from Islamic radicals. The address was designed to promote missile defense as the cornerstone of a new national security strategy and contained no mention of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, or Islamic extremist groups, according to former U.S. officials who have seen the text. The text also implicitly challenged the Clinton administration's policy, saying it did not do enough about the real threat, long-range missiles. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
A man was charged with robbing two banks less than a day after getting out of prison for a botched 2001 convenience store robbery in which he held a can of ravioli under his shirt to simulate a gun. Thomas Rakowski was arrested Tuesday morning a few minutes after someone robbed the First Commonwealth Bank in Tarentum, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. Police said an alarm system sent a distress call directly to a dispatch center and helped them quickly locate Rakowski and his vehicle, which matched witness descriptions. Police said he also had a note demanding money from a teller. This is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The Bushites seem to enjoy the fun game of preemptive regime change, in which they shout weapons of mass destruction before attacking a country with the full might of the U.S. military, tossing out the old leaders, installing some new ones, occupying the country, and calling this democracy. Now, however, they are saying that regime change need not be limited to nations that might pose some military threat to our country. For the past couple of years, these messianic global manipulators have quietly been out to topple Hugo Chavez, the duly elected president of Venezuela. What threat does Chavez pose to us? None. Zero. Zip. What's his crime? He's too lefty, not beholden to the oil giants operating in Venezuela, not properly obedient to U.S. power, and worst of all, the Bushites just don't like him. So they've been scheming with Venezuelan elites to oust him. They exulted in 2002 when an armed coup overthrew Chavez's elected government, but White House elation turned to sour grapes only 2 days later when the coup turned out to be a Keystone Cops effort and the people of Venezuela rallied to put their man Chavez back in his presidency. But this didn't stop the White House. Reams of internal documents have now surfaced showing a startling effort by the Bushites to undermine the legitimate government of Venezuela, a blatantly anti-democratic effort that, ironically, they rationalize by asserting that Chavez is not democratic enough to suit them. Last year alone, they funneled $1 million of our tax dollars into opposition groups seeking to overthrow Chavez and install Venezuela's moneyed class in power. One of the Bushites' documents claims that the future of Venezuelan democracy, quote, depends on the rebuilding of healthy and responsive political parties that can effectively channel citizen demands. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, let's try to accomplish that here. If our own government reflected citizen demands, it wouldn't be messing with Venezuela.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited, so you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Thursday, April 1st. Let's hope this isn't an April Fool's joke. Members of the House of Representatives are introducing a bill today similar to one offered in the Senate by Senators John McCain and Joseph Lieberman, which would require U.S. industries to curtail emissions of carbon dioxide. That's a little legislative attempt to do something close to like what Kyoto was all about and all that sort of thing. And, you know, as you might expect, this is bringing the representatives of industry out into the open. Here we have with us today here, Myron, is it Ebel or Ebel? I'm sorry.
Ebel is fine.
Ebel.
Thank you, Tom.
Hey, Myron. Myron oversees all global warming and international environmental work for CIE, which is the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He also chairs the Cooler Heads Coalition, a subgroup of the National Consumers Coalition that focuses on climate change. We should note that your group won the Villain of the Month Award a couple of years ago from the Clean Air Trust. Ebel earned, actually you did apparently, earned this dubious distinction by leading a ferocious lobbying charge to persuade President Bush to reverse his campaign pledge to control electric utility emissions of carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas linked to global warming. We have won a famous victory, you wrote in your March 14th email to anti-clean air allies, and everyone should congratulate themselves on the work we did to achieve this end. Why? Why, Myron?
Oh, well, because, first of all, we think that the scientific case for getting alarmed about global warming is not only weak, but it's really collapsed. And secondly, even if global warming turns out to be a problem, we're never going to solve it down the Kyoto road of rationing energy and cutting our fossil fuel use.
You really think the American industry is that stupid?
No, I think I've looked at the World Energy Outlook's forecast for the next 20 and 30 years. I've looked at the U.S. Department of Energy's EIA forecasts, which are similar, and I've looked at a lot of private consulting firms. And what you see in the world is, it's not that the world has too much energy, it has a lot too little. We've got 2 billion people out there without electricity. We've got a similar number without access to modern transportation. They can't become part of the modern world without electricity. So the World Energy Outlook says that in 30 years we're going to be using over 60% more energy in the world than we are today, and a higher percentage of it will come from fossil fuels, that's coal, oil, and natural gas, than today. So for the U.S. to try to go down this road, or Europe or whoever, isn't going to work because the world is very energy poor. They need it. If global warming turns out to be a problem, we're going to have to find a different solution.
But okay, you've got there's a couple of intrinsic assumptions here. First of all, you're saying,
yes,
you're quoting this study that says, you know, the energy use is going to go up. Clearly, population goes up. You know, in fact, the CO2 and the atmospheric CO2 just spiked this year quite significantly. A lot of people are saying it's because of China. We went up three parts per million in 1 year, which has never happened before. Mm-hmm. And you're suggesting that because energy use is going to go up, we need more fossil fuels?
Well, no, it's just the by the way, the World Energy Outlook and the Department of Energy, similar one produced by the EIA, both assume actually
But the EIA is a front group for industry. I mean, you guys are just shills for industry.
Well, the World Energy Outlook is produced by the International Energy Agency, which is certainly not a shill for energy. But anyway, leaving that aside, the fact is that they build into their models assumptions that that Europe and the United States are going to control carbon dioxide emissions, and they still say we're going to use over 60% more energy and a higher percentage of it will come from fossil fuels than from other sources. So this is just the reality that the world faces. Whether you like it or not, CO2 levels are going to go up. We'll see what the effect is. I think it's going to be very minimal. Other people think not. But if it is a problem, we're going to have to find a different solution.
But it's a problem that has a 100-year lag time and lead time. I mean, it takes 100 years to scrub that carbon dioxide back out of the atmosphere. So you're saying, let's go ahead and do this. Let's mess with the atmosphere. And if it's a problem, hey, we don't have to worry about it. It'll be our great-grandchildren. Screw them.
Well, I just say that that's an extremely prejudicial way to put my case,
that's,
and I
essentially
appreciate that that's what you're here for. And what I'm here for is to tell you, first of all, I think the science behind the alarm is junk. And secondly, if it's a problem, it will be a problem that will be dealt with in different ways. One of the ways is technological innovation and technological transformation.
But we have that right now. We have the ability right now to move to alternative forms of energy, and it would create an economic boom. I mean, you know, you're talking about new industries, new opportunities for America. Extraordinary. But you guys, you know, who are taking money from the fossil fuel industry, you're out there going, but you've got like Swiss Re here. This is the largest reinsurance company in the world. This is the reinsurance industry is the industry that provides insurance to the insurance industry. So that, you know, if homeowner, you know, if State Farm Insurance has a, you know, gets wiped out in Florida because there's a huge hurricane or something, they can't pay that. They actually have insurance with another insurance company, and they're called reinsurance company. The largest in the world is Swiss Re. And Swiss Re is now on the record as saying they've done the science, and they've got, and they're not just, you know, government bureaucrats, and they're not just, you know, shills for industry. They are guys who have to pay if this comes out. I mean, their financial butts are on the line, and they say that losses to insurers from environmental impacts have risen exponentially over the past 30 years and are expected to rise even more rapidly. I am assuming you understand what exponentially means.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you question the motives of one kind of industry but not of another. What are the motives of the insurance industry?
Oh, they're trying to save money.
To get the highest rates and to pay out the least.
Sure.
So of course they're going to be in the global warming camp. Of course. Now, as far
Wait a minute. Why? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with them saying, hey, global warming is causing ecological disasters and we're having to pay for it and we'd rather not pay for it, so we'd rather not have global warming? What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, global warming is not causing global disasters, but let me get back to your point that the payouts because of disasters have gone up and are going up exponentially. If you look at the data, for instance, for hurricanes in the Atlantic and the Gulf Coast, the number of hurricanes has not gone up. There's no pattern in the last 100 years, and the intensity of the storms has actually been going down. Now, why have the payouts been going up? Because instead of having a few beach shacks in Florida, we now have multi-million dollar homes. If a hurricane hits Florida now, there's major damage, and that's insured, and so insurance companies have got to pay out. If all you have is a beach shack, you don't get much of a payout.
Yeah, I think that in the last 20 years, there hasn't been that much of an explosion of beach shacks being converted into condos, Myron. Come on, you know.
Well, have you been down the North Carolina coast or the
That's not the only place on Earth.
We got millions and millions of people now who live in a hurricane area where 20 years ago we had hundreds of thousands of people.
And that is not the only place on Earth that Swiss Re is reinsuring.
Oh, sure, sure, and I agree. And I would make the same case every place you can find more natural disasters. It's because there's a lot more capital investment by human beings in those areas. And that's why they have to pay out more.
Then why isn't Swiss Re saying, we're opposed to capital investment, or here's a new set of actuarial tables? I mean, I'm assuming that you don't think the insurance companies are so dumb that they can't figure out that if people build new buildings that they have to pay higher rates for insurance?
Sure, of course they do, but what they want to do is to raise the rates higher on the basis of a potential risk from global warming. They want to say, we think we may have to pay out a lot from global warming in the future, and therefore we want to raise our rates.
Actually, that's
down.
Not what they're saying.
They want to sell that to their customers.
That's not what they're saying. What they're saying is reduce carbon dioxide. They're saying this to, they're just out front.
Yeah, well,
it has nothing, you know.
Again, if you're going to question the motives of one kind of industry, you should question their motives as well.
I think they both have the same motives. They both have the exact same motives, which is to maximize profits, as you said. I completely agree with you. Similarly, the oil industry, which supports you, has the motive of maximizing their profits. But they have no dog in the race of or fight or whatever the phrase is of maximizing solar profits. BP does and Shell does, but none of the American companies are moving ahead with solar power or with wind power, things like this. And so, of course, they're going to, let's make as much money off this thing as we can, and stick our kids with the bill.
Yeah, well, the insurance thing is very interesting because if the risk that is not the risk that the insurance company wants to have is a potential risk that doesn't actually occur. That's their ideal risk. Because if it doesn't actually occur, they never have to pay out, but they can ask for more premiums right now. So that they're in the ideal situation with global warming. It's very unlikely that it's going to cause many problems, but they'll be able to raise their rates.
They're saying it already is, and these guys are pretty good bean counters. I mean, and you got the Antarctic ice shelf the size of Scotland is disintegrating due to warmer seas.
The Antarctic ice shelf is thickening, and the temperatures on the Antarctic continent have been going down for the last 20 years significantly.
Exactly, in the
and
center of Antarctica.
If global warming theory were true, it says that most of the warming will occur in the upper latitudes, and if Antarctica is cooling, that is a piece of counter evidence to the theory. So the fact that the ice shelf is thickening in Antarctica and the temperatures are going down significantly should mean that people who believe in the theory, which are you going to choose, the facts or the theory?
Well, that's one of the theories. That's one of the models. Another model is that as global warming increases, the circulation of the Great Conveyor Belt, the Gulf Stream, starts to decrease. And in fact, in the late 90s, in the mid 90s, and the late 90s, there have been three collapses, local collapses of the Gulf Stream. and the, what that will do, and what it historically has done when the last time it happened 12,000 years ago, is that it increases cold at the extreme north and south pole, and it radically increases heat at the equator. So I mean, you know, you can pick dueling models. We've got a caller here. Let's hear what Dave has to say in New Mexico. 1-866-889-8894. We're on the line with Myron Edel. No, wait a second. Hey, Myron, give me your name. I lost
Ebel.
The piece of paper. Ebel, thank you. I'm
close
sorry.
Anything is fine.
I've got to put that right in front of me. Okay, Myron Ebel, and with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which is what, CIE.org?
CEI.org, correct.
.org. Thank you very much. Okay, let's take Dave from New Mexico. Hey, Dave, what are your thoughts on all this?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Enjoy your program. My question for your guest is... the way I see global warming, if it's happening, we're like on a freight train and we're barreling down the track at 60 miles an hour, and there are various scientists yelling at us, hey, the bridge is out. The bridge is out, you know, 2 miles ahead. And then there's other people yelling, no, don't believe it. It's not true. The bridge is fine. Keep going. Of course, by the time we can see the bridges out, jam on the brakes, we're going over.
Well, we won't see it. Our kids will. I mean, that's the issue.
And the fact is, it'll be too late to change our behavior to avoid disaster.
Yeah.
So the question to your guest is...
Quickly, Dave.
Okay, the question to the guest is, what evidence does he need to see to prove global warming?
Okay, great.
What evidence would he see?
Thank you, Dave. Hang on, Myron. We'll be right back with you. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If elected, I'll lie about weapons of mass destruction as a pretext to invade another country.
I'll call myself an environmentalist and gut clean air standards.
Our allies will go from respecting us to hating us, and I don't care.
I'll leave no child behind, unless they can't afford it.
I promise to keep you in a state of fear and anxiety, so you never question what we're doing.
And if you do, we'll call you unpatriotic.
Furthermore...
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Check your weapons at the door. You don't live here anymore. But a heart can never offend when it doesn't know it spent its lifetime beating itself.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. 25 minutes past the hour. Some 10,000 years ago, up until about 300 years ago, carbon dioxide in the atmosphere stood at around 280 parts per million. Last year it was 376 parts per million. This year, 379 parts per million, according to scientists monitoring it atop a Hawaiian volcano. This year-to-year increase of about 3 parts per million is a considerably higher than the average annual increase of 1.8 parts per million over the past decade and markedly more accelerated than the 1 part per million annual increase recorded over the past half century. This is a story from the Associated Press. We're talking with Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, www.cei.org. Hey, Myron, you wanted to respond to Dave before we get Patrick in Jersey.
Thank you, Tom. Dave asked a good question, which is using the analogy of a train hurtling towards a canyon that has a bridge. And the question is the bridge out? And if the bridge is out, maybe we ought to think about stopping now. Well,
or slowing down.
I have two answers. First, I think the problem is even if we are hurtling towards that bridge, the proposed solution isn't going to work. And I've already talked about that. But let me also go back.
No, you haven't. How is a rapid worldwide conversion to number one, to renewable sources of energy, non-petroleum-based sources of energy, and number two, to reduce the consumption of energy? How is that not viable?
Right. Well, the fact is, as I said earlier, and I'll try to elaborate a little bit more so I do answer your question, the world is energy poor. We're trying to use every kind of energy source we have, and this whole system is strained. It's not that we're not, trying to develop new kinds of energy.
Wait a second. You said the world is energy poor. There is sunlight falling down on this planet that is not being used. I mean, this world is awash in energy. We're just not using it.
Yeah. Well, solar has been on the horizon since 1970. We put hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars into it. I'll tell you, you mentioned that BP and Shell owned solar units. Most of those solar units used to be owned by the Exxon Corporation. They sold them after pouring millions of dollars and hundreds of millions into them and deciding that the technology was too far away to be.
And now we have a situation where in the state of California, the solar energy industry has more than doubled in the past 2 years. It's now down to seven cents a kilowatt hour. To produce electricity by solar, and off the main grid, people are paying 13 to 14 cents a kilowatt hour. That's not viable.
No, it isn't viable.
It's cheaper.
It's a niche market. It's fine where it is, but first of all, it's a lot more expensive than conventional. And secondly, the sun doesn't shine everywhere all the time, And third, there was a huge article in the Washington Post a couple years ago about L.A. trying to become the solar capital of the world. And after huge tax breaks for solar, they had about 140 homes that had actually put it in, even though they were essentially giving it away because it is so uneconomic.
But what we're seeing,
I'm not against solar power. It's just we're a long ways away from it.
What we're seeing with solar technology, though, is the same thing we saw with computer technology, and that is that every couple of years you have this doubling of the efficiency. I mean, the solar cells are generated using the same technology that computer chips are to a large extent.
In fact, what you say is wrong. Every couple of years, we do not have a doubling. Every couple of years, we have a few percent increase in efficiency. It will take, I think, I'm not against solar. I'm not against wind power. I'm not against anything anybody can think up. But a lot of these things have been around for a long time. Huge amounts of money have been put into them, and they're still very expensive. They're great as niche technologies. They add to our energy mix. They add to our energy resources. But the bulk is still provided by coal, oil, natural gas, nuclear, and hydropower.
It is. I agree. And that I think a lot of people in the world are starting to say, and that's a problem. We're talking with Myron Edel of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Dave in New Jersey, or Patrick in New Jersey. Hang on. We'll get to you. And other callers there on the line. Hang on. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A significant dilemma for some 1,200 workers at two furnace and air conditioning factories in Syracuse, New York, run by the Carrier Corporation. Carrier announced those plants will close at the end of this month and much of the work will move overseas, but the company's contract with the unions at the factories requires Carrier to provide job retraining services for up to 4 years after the workforce is laid off. However, the U.S. Department of Labor says because Carrier's paying for the workers' education, they are disqualified from collecting unemployment if they participate in it. New York's own Department of Labor is petitioning the feds to reconsider their decision, and the state's congressional delegation may get involved.
Outsourcing is a good thing, according to the Information Technology Association of America, which says sending U.S. jobs overseas to save money on labor costs will ultimately lower inflation, create jobs, and boost productivity in the United States. The ITAA also found migration of tech jobs to low-paid foreigners has eliminated 104,000 American jobs, nearly 3% of the positions in the U.S. technology industry. But the report predicts economic recovery will ultimately increase the number of IT jobs. Little comfort for those currently out of work.
Last week, part-time workers at Walt Disney World in Florida ratified their first union contract. But yesterday, a Disney World resort reopened, and at this one, the union workforce has been decimated. The $92 million complex named Shades of Green is open to military vacationers only and closed in 2002 due to low bookings. Most of the union staff were laid off. On the new staff, only one out of every 100 workers has a union job. Disney profits twice because Shades of Green is exempt from state and federal taxes due to its military-exclusive clientele.
15,000 home care workers providing long-term care to seniors in Illinois may get a pay increase. Currently, these workers are paid 20% less than those who care for people with disabilities. Now, Illinois State House members showed overwhelming support for the parity pay bill, voting 111-0. The legislation would raise wages, making them equal for workers caring for seniors and those caring for people with disabilities. The legislation now moves on to the Senate.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of big strikes in the United States rose last year, according to new figures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 129,200 workers went on strike for a month or more, collectively sacrificing 4.1 million work days. That's more than a six-fold increase from 2002, due in large part to walkouts involving supermarket workers in several states. Strikes that involved 1,000 workers or more lasted an average of 22 days last year, although the majority of those ended in a month or less.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Helping you in the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute about global warming and this legislation that's before Congress. And I'd like to go to the larger issue with you, Myron. But first, let's take this call from Patrick and see what he has to say. Patrick in New Jersey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the line. You're on the air, Patrick.
All right. Great show. Thank you. You're doing a very good job of keeping up with the nonsense spinning out of your guests. I hope that if you haven't already, you'll have some more reasonable guests in the future, like somebody, for instance, from Union of Concerned Scientists or Ross Gelbspan.
Ross has been a guest on this show.
Okay, terrific. And, yeah. You know, the vast majority of the world's top climate scientists instituted in working together in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change have established beyond any reasonable doubt that global warming is happening. It is a real threat. The constant statements by your guest are just absurd to say that the science on global climate change is junk science. The listeners may not really get a good conception of how extremely marginalized his point of view is. The vast majority of the world's climate scientists are clear. Global warming is happening. It's a real threat. The evidence is all around us. It's overwhelming. So his claims to the contrary are just ludicrous and represent an extremely marginal point of view of a few of the big fossil fuel industries.
Yeah.
The things that we need to do start doing immediately and can be done right now. The technology is there. It's existing now with solar and wind technologies, with more reliance on mass transit, with better efficiency of cars, higher and miles per gallon, hybrid vehicles. All these things exist now, can be ramped up rapidly, and are cost-effective and would greatly reduce the use of fossil fuels. That's what we need. No one's talking about reducing the use of energy. We want to increase the use of energy, but reduce the use of fossil fuels in that energy. That's what the world needs, and
okay,
we need to start doing it right now.
Got your point, Patrick. And the IPCC, come on, Myron. Literally, the vast majority of scientists on planet Earth who have anything to do with climate change say, come on, you guys. This is happening. This is real.
We
got a few industry
Dave's
people
question,
out here.
So let me try to answer Patrick's a little bit better.
Okay.
No, you are absolutely wrong about the IPCC reports. I've read large portions of all three volumes. It's close to 3,000 pages. Those reports do not support climate alarmism. What does is the 20-some page summary for policymakers that was not written by the scientists who wrote the reports, the hundreds of scientists that authored and co-authored the chapters, but by the bureaucrats.
Come on, Myron, you've got six guys you can trot out. You got Fred Singer and a couple of other guys who are paid by industry.
Look, Tom, I know you don't have a lot of time because you got to do this show every day. But if you got some time, look at the 3,000 pages, not at the 20-some page summary for policymakers. The reports do not support it, and the scientists don't sign on to the summary.
And
they
chapters
that they write.
If you just keep saying that, people will start to believe it.
No, let me quote Jim Hansen to you. Jim Hansen is the guy who got the global warming thing going in 1988 when he testified on the hottest day of the summer before Senator Al Gore's subcommittee, 1988. Then he was talking about an 8-degree warming by the late 1990s. Now what he
well,
says,
he was wrong. I mean, you know.
Well, okay, he was wrong, right? But
he is not the IPCC, right? And he is not all the scientists on Earth. I mean, well, I am hearing six or seven guys who are, you know, Ross Gelbspan has just really outed these guys, you know, who are all taking money from the fossil fuel industry, just like you are, who are running around saying, hey, it's really not a problem. There's really not a scientific consensus when you've got literally thousands of scientists on one side and a small handful on your side. I mean,
yeah, but hold it. You don't want to hear what Jim Hansen, it's just two sentences. Jim Hansen invented the scare in 1988. Here's what he said, August 2003. Emphasis on extreme scenarios may have been appropriate at one time when the public and decision makers were relatively unaware of the global warming issue. Now, however, the need is for demonstrably objective climate-forcing scenarios consistent with what is realistic under current conditions. What does that mean? Well, he published a paper with Soon in September of 2003. His prediction by 2050 is a climate global mean temperature going up 0.5 degrees plus or minus 0.2 degrees.
Myron, you know, you can quote one guy. I can quote one guy. We can do this all day long. The larger issue here is that we have this thing called – are you still there, Myron?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have this thing called the commons. Right, it's right. It's the stuff that you and I share. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff that our children are going to inherit.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do not just with the quality of life that we have. It has to do with the survival of species on the planet, and perhaps of the human race. If there's any doubt, even a small doubt, why would you take money from the oil industry to challenge it?
Well, we've been in business since 84, and my boss, Fred Singer, was talking about the fact that the next big thing that the environmentalists were going to try to do to scare the public was global warming before 1988. We developed
maybe they're trying to scare the public about it because it's real.
The first grant we ever got on global warming. Our positions have been consistent since before 1988. Many years before.
Oh, I know. Back in
dollar from a contributor.
Back in 1997, you guys were lobbying Congress to cut off funding for the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation in July, and
you guys knew about the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. You would be for cutting it off too, because it's a bunch of Republican fat cats who want to use public money to support their habits of locking up land for their hunting and fishing.
But you know, your funders are Amoco, CSX, Ford, Texaco Foundation, the American Petroleum Institute. I mean, Myron, I assume that you're a decent human being. I don't think anybody can go to bed at night and look themselves in the mirror and just say, you know, I'm a terrible person. I don't think people can live that way. I just don't understand why, if there's any possibility that this thing might produce a disaster for your children and their children, that you would be taking these extreme positions.
Well, because, Tom, there are many, many things where there is a very tiny chance.
What's the upside?
We have many more serious environmental problems than the potential threat of global warming.
But that's what this is the one we're talking about, Myron. Myron, what's the upside if you're right?
Low-level problem.
What's the upside if you're right?
The upside, if I'm right, is that we won't have wasted trillions of dollars and impoverished billions of people around the world. We have real problems that if you spend money and time on one thing, you can't spend it on another.
It's a zero-sum game, huh?
It's a zero-sum game. And by the way, talking about funding, don't you develop your positions and then go try to find advertisers to support your show?
No, I don't.
We develop positions and then we try to find funding for it. You don't.
No, I don't. I don't. My advertisers are not advertising with me because of my political opinions. They're advertising with me because people listen to the program and they want to sell things to them. Period. I have no political advertisers on this show. I would love for the DNC to give me some money, although I'm not a Democrat. But you know, no, I have no political. No, I don't do what you guys do. Sorry. 1-866-889-8894. Ben Birch in Elgin, Illinois, is on the line. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, Myron. I'm an engineer. I have a physics background. I've worked in the nuclear power industry, and I've worked on scientific climate models. You know, the problem here is one of terminology. What you're calling global warming is really global climate change. In fact, the thickening of the ice at the South Pole is precisely what most of the models I've worked on predict. They predict a pushing of the extremes to greater cold at the poles and a lot more heat in the tropics and at the equator. In fact, they show real massive changes in the rainfall patterns both in Europe and across the steppes of Asia and in Africa and in South America and in the United States. When you have a 1 degree change in the average global temperature, that is all you need to make a 15% to 20% change in the Midwestern rainfall in the United States. That is what we're talking about. These tiny changes, yeah, the whole planet isn't going to burn up. It isn't going to melt tomorrow. But these little changes really affect the entire global temperature engine. There's a heat engine that involves the oceans. It involves the atmosphere. And that is what is getting messed up right now. And it's a change that is going to reach what we call a catastrophe
effect. But, Ben, it's going to cost Exxon money. They've given up on solar. It's going to cost them money if we make these changes.
Yeah, well
you know, if we don't make these changes, we're all going to be dead in 8 years.
I've got consensus on my side here. The IPCC
No, you don't.
All
you
the
are a liar,
that they
man.
Use to predict
I have consensus
more
on
warming
my side. I know the physicists
in the
have
upper
done
latitudes
work.
And very little warming in the tropics. All of them predict that. None of them predict what you've just said.
Actually, you know, I just wrote a book about this, and I suggest that you know, there's a number of excellent books on the topic, but sorry, Myron, you're wrong.
I've read the IPCC chapter on this.
Well, maybe the IPCC report from 10 years ago.
Latitudes, mostly in winter and mostly at night.
Yeah, well, read the most recent science because it's just not the case. Ben, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Read for A Brain for All Seasons by William Calvin. I think you'll find it very interesting. It's a great book. It's Kodak in South Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak.
Yes, I have a PhD in BS, and I can tell that our guest today is standing in some cat poo-poo, and he's arguing over the fact whether it's cat poo-poo or dog poo-poo.
Yeah.
Well, that's my comment. My question is, did he read the Pentagon report about global warming?
Yeah, that's a good one.
This
was in Fortune magazine about, four or five months ago. The Pentagon is getting ready. So what are your thoughts on that, Myron?
Well, I of course I read it. It's written.
They're just a bunch of dumb liberals, right?
No. It's written at a contract from the Pentagon to a private firm to war game. What would be the response of the Pentagon if some abrupt climate change happened, which cooled Europe down?
Right.
It does not make the connection to
which cooled the poles
increases
also.
In CO2. And it does not, it says, this is a very unlikely event, but if it happens, what will we do? Well, the answer is not the Kyoto Treaty. Let me tell you, that's not even mentioned because they know it doesn't have anything to do with it.
But we're talking about. We're not even arguing Kyoto here.
We've
backed out of it. But the point is that we have this thing, the commons. I mean, don't we have a responsibility to make sure that you know, to just operate within the context of something close to the precautionary principle?
No. I think the precautionary principle is only half
screw
the
it.
Story.
Just make money as fast as you can.
No. The precautionary principle is fine as far as it goes, but you have to look at there is a risk in taking an action, and there is a risk in not taking.
So you think there's a risk if we move to solar power?
You have to always balance risks, not look at everything individually and say, oh, this might pose a risk. If you build a new hospital, people may get killed in building it. It may harm people's health, but you have to balance.
You're really stretching here, Myron. You're really stretching. Come on. You're saying to me that it's going to do more good for the world if we continue to burn fossil fuels at the rate that we are, and in fact at increasing rates, than it will do good for the world if we launch a Manhattan Project-style project to produce clean energy, get the thing rolling, increase the efficiency of solar, increase our use of wind power, increase our use of hydrothermal, and increase decrease our overall consumption of energy by increasing models of efficiency, which actually can drive economies. I mean, look at, you know, a Toyota right now. I own a Toyota Prius. You can't buy one right now. It's a four-month waiting list to get one. The thing gets 50 miles to the gallon.
They lose a lot of money on each one, so they don't produce that many because they don't want to lose too much money.
Then why are General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler all coming out with these hybrid technology cars next year?
Oh, I'm all for the hybrid technology cars.
I don't think they're doing it because they plan on losing money.
Your scenario is fine, except that it's based on some fantasies. The world economy does not turn on a dime. New technology is on the horizon, but it's not going to happen in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. This is a 50 to 100-year transformation of the entire global economy into new kinds of technologies and new energy.
How long did it take from the time that buggy whip manufacturers?
We've been trying to force solar and wind since the 70s, and wind is still just as far from being competitive as it was in the 70s.
I think you're making the same argument the buggy whip manufacturers made. Oh, that automobile, that's no big deal. Those are inefficient. They're expensive. Nobody's going to use them. They make a lot of noise. They're stinky.
The buggy was replaced by the automobile without government subsidies. It was replaced by people figuring out that they had a product that people actually wanted to buy. We've been putting hundreds of millions of
and
dollars.
And now our commons
power
is at
wind
risk.
Wind power is fine, but it's not economic.
Okay? Yeah, Bill in Santa Fe, you're on the line. Bill, we got about 2 minutes here left.
Yes. Hi, I'm calling from New Mexico. And here in the Southwest, water is frequently an issue. Mm-hmm. It frequently makes the headlines, availability of water and what we're going to do to conserve it. Mm-hmm. And here in New Mexico, most of our energy is produced by coal. Mm-hmm. And that uses like 7 times the amount of water that the entire city of Santa Fe uses. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think we have anything at all to fear from clean, renewable energy like wind or solar. And we have a lot to fear from, you know, water-intensive, high-polluting energy like coal and nuclear.
So, Myron.
That's fine.
I just want to say, we're talking to Myron Ebell of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI. Myron, you got about 10 seconds, and then we're done here. So I'll give you the last word.
I'm for all kinds of energy. I want more energy. If a new technology is developed that makes windmills competitive, I'm for it. Okay?
Great.
But right now, we're not there yet, and the world isn't going to be there for a while.
Thank you. Myron Ebell, CEI.org is the website. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Myron, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate you.
Weathered well.
Thanks.
Bye now.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New UN regulations for commercial shipping address a major problem with tiny stowaways. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global trade and shipping has given rise to a global problem with foreign organisms that travel in the ballast water of ships. The United Nations recently adopted the first international standards to deal with this problem. Ship owners and ports will have more than 5 years to put them into practice, but these new regulations for handling ballast water will be mandatory. Ships routinely take in ballast water when they're traveling without cargo, and they dump it when they get to their destinations. The ballast water is essential for keeping the ship stable at sea. The problem is that the water is usually filled with plants and animals, and when they're released into foreign waters, they can wreak havoc on native species. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. Corbett says the regulations show that the international community is responding to some environmental effects of global commerce. He says the regulations set mandatory standards for treating ballast water to filter out or kill invading organisms before the ballast is dumped out. He says these are the first regulations of their kind, and if the global standards don't provide enough protection for coastal ecosystems, he says the rules allow countries to set even stricter standards.
The recognition in this treaty that regions may set stricter standards is really very important and does demonstrate that the international community understands the nature of this global problem and its regional differences.
The new ballast water rules were adopted in February by the UN's International Maritime Organization. Corbett says ships will have 5 to 12 years to adopt treatment technologies that meet the new standards. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to Tom Hartman Radio Program. The northernmost reaches of the Earth are warming. This is an Associated Press story. Reducing the sea ice across the Arctic Ocean, melting the ice sheet in Greenland, and spreading shrubs from the Alaskan tundra, scientists said Saturday. Greenland is experiencing a warming spell. Since 1979, the melt area has grown by 16% and is affecting higher and higher elevations. Across the Arctic Ocean, the floating mantle of ice that covers it throughout much of the year shrank to record levels this summer, said Mark Cerise of the University of Colorado. In September, sea ice extent was 4% lower than seen in any previous September since monitoring began. Shrubs are pushing further north, growing in areas of tundra that were void of trees as little as 50 years ago, according to Stuart Chapin of the University of Illinois in Fairbanks, Alaska. It's happening. It is real. What can I say? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number to wrap up the hour here. Israel in New York. Hey, Israel, what's up?
Hi. I want to say when I was a teenager, in 1976, my dad and also all my neighbor in Israel, they were putting solar panels on the roof.
Right.
And the only thing they use it for heat the water to save on the electrical bill.
Yeah.
It cost about 6 or 7 month worth of electrical bill to put it, but the saving was tremendous. My dad today, he still used the same solar panel 28 years later for heating water.
Yeah, I've spent a fair amount of time in the Middle East, and particularly in Israel. You see that all over the place, but you see it a lot in a lot of other Middle Eastern countries as well. Most people heat their water with solar.
I understand why they won't use it here. I mean, put it up. You can right now with the current technology, you can use it even to provide electricity.
Well, certainly just south of the Mason-Dixon line. Yeah, here in the United States, we have a recent study indicated. I reported on this show. I don't have it right in front of me, but that there's enough wind power just between the Rocky Mountains and the Mississippi River just in that area that actually can be captured, not just, you know, the total amount of wind flowing through the area, to supply all the electricity for the entire United States.
Not only that, all southern United States, from San Diego all the way to Texas, you can build solar station over there to provide energy. You have more than enough sun energy to provide all the Americas.
Yeah, absolutely. Israel, good point. Thanks for making it. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Stick around. We'll be back after the news.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. A burst of violence against Americans in Iraq on Wednesday made March the second deadliest month for U.S. troops since George W. Bush declared an end to combat last May. 5 U.S. troops and 4 American civilians were killed on the final day of the month, just over a year after American forces launched the invasion to topple Saddam Hussein's government. At least 48 troops died in Iraq during March, up from 21 in February and 46 in January. 19 were killed by roadside bombs or improvised explosive devices, according to military records. George W. Bush expressed disappointment on Wednesday at OPEC's oil output cut and pressed allies inside and outside the cartel to fill any gap in supply to prevent higher prices after Democratic rival John Kerry accused Bush of ignoring record pump prices. While initially raising no public objections to OPEC's decision, the White House later voiced its displeasure at the production cut. Bush's timid reaction to OPEC stands at odds with his 2000 campaign promise to take on OPEC on behalf of American consumers. At the time, spokesman Scott McClellan said rising gas prices were a sign of failed leadership. The Washington Post reports that on September 11, 2001, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was scheduled to outline a Bush administration policy that would address the threats and problems of today and the day after, not the world of yesterday, but the focus was largely on missile defense, not terrorism from Islamic radicals. The address was designed to promote missile defense as the cornerstone of a new national security strategy and contained no mention of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, or Islamic extremist groups, according to former U.S. officials who have seen the text. The text also implicitly challenged the Clinton administration's policy, saying it did not do enough about the real threat, long-range missiles. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
A man was charged with robbing two banks less than a day after getting out of prison for a botched 2001 convenience store robbery in which he held a can of ravioli under his shirt to simulate a gun. Thomas Rakowski was arrested Tuesday morning a few minutes after someone robbed the First Commonwealth Bank in Tarentum, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. Police said an alarm system sent a distress call directly to a dispatch center and helped them quickly locate Rakowski and his vehicle, which matched witness descriptions. Police said he also had a note demanding money from a teller. This is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have been to the cross, and I have felt the passion. Not Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion, where viewers get to see a Jesus character beaten to a bloody pulp and then graphically crucified on a cross. No, there's nothing at all holy or redeeming about the cross I have witnessed. It's a political cross, marking the spot in Austin, Texas, where the GOP's diabolical hatchet man, Tom DeLay, beat our state's representative democracy to a pulp. This simple wooden cross, nailed to a telephone pole, is 4 feet high, painted white, and hand-lettered. The crosspiece says, Democracy. The centerpiece says, R.I.P., killed by Tom DeLay on this spot. Tom, of course, is the nutball Republican majority leader of the U.S. House, who stormed into the Texas state capitol last year and used the GOP's total control of state government to ram through a grossly partisan, contorted piece of raw gerrymandering that autocratically redraws our state's congressional districts and steals half a dozen seats from the Democrats, a theft that will alter the balance of power in Washington. Austin has long had its own coherent congressional district, logical for a state capital and a community of shared interests. DeLay's power grab, however, fractures our city into three shards of incoherent districts that are dominated by populations far from our borders. Stand in central Austin at 38th and Ronson Streets, where the telephone pole cross was erected, and you are at the epicenter of the fracture. Step in one direction and you're in a district controlled by San Antonio's Republican suburbs. Step in another direction and you're in a district running 300 miles away to the Rio Grande Valley. Step again and you're in a district controlled by Houston's Republican suburbs. This is Jim Hightower saying, a majority of Austinites now have congressional districts without representation. There once was a revolution over that anti-democratic principle.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited, so you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Calling for our
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We're back here with you. It's the second hour of our Thursday program, and every Thursday in our second hour, we try and go beyond the kind of normal talk radio stuff of politics and news and get into stuff that you didn't know that you didn't know, and you didn't even know that you need to know. But maybe you need to know what you didn't know, and that you didn't know that you didn't know it, and so it's our...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
It's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, and I'm really pleased today to have on with me for this segment an old friend of mine, Michael Hutchison. Michael was one of the first books that I wrote. I believe it was Prophet's Way. It might have been Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Michael wrote a blurb for it, and I was so pleased to get it because Michael is the author of a number of extraordinary books, Mega Brain, The Mega Brain Power, The Book of Floating. There was a book, Michael, you wrote about sex and power too, wasn't there?
Right. The investigation, the anatomy of sex and power.
The anatomy of sex and power.
Investigation of mind-body politics.
There you go. Yeah. So Michael's an award-winning author, and a couple of years ago, how many years ago was this that this happened, Michael?
Five
years ago, I heard about this and actually got on a plane and went out to New Mexico and visited Michael in the hospital. Michael was out running and one morning in the snowy day in Santa Fe, and tripped and fell over a bridge into a stream or into a river and broke his neck and ended up paralyzed from the neck down to a large extent. And you were stuck there for some time before somebody noticed you were there, weren't you?
Right. Actually, it was the evening. It was getting dark.
Ah.
And I slipped and fell off the bridge and hit the back of my neck on a rock. And I was submerged up to my neck in the water. And it was icy winter water. And I thought, what a stupid way to go, because I knew that there was no way I could move and no way I could get out of there. So I just kind of accepted the fact that I was going to die.
Yeah.
And in fact, I actually did die, because by the time they pulled, somebody fortunately did see me. And by the time they pulled me out of the water, I was legally dead, I guess, and they had to resuscitate me.
Yeah.
That time, I had a very interesting death experience, I would say, in that I felt myself drifting away, colder and colder, but it became kind of comfortable. And then at the point where I lost consciousness, my personality and myself and my body, I just went into this big, this total empty, infinite emptiness, and it was a very welcoming place. And I realized that this infinite emptiness had been there before I was born, and here it was after Mike was dead. And then the most surprising thing was that it had been there all the time during my life, and I realized this is always there. And later, as I'll tell, that became a very important insight to me.
Yeah.
As I was in the hospital.
And then they took you to the hospital, and the you were a quadriplegic then at that point. And that's when I came out there, and a friend of mine who lived in Albuquerque at the time, Ari Mayan, was a Native American shaman, and I brought Ari over to your hospital room and in Santa Fe, and we did a ceremony whatever we could do. And but it was a really miserable time for you. I mean, you looked, it seemed to me, profoundly unhappy and frankly depressed about, you know, the fact that you'd lost the ability to use your hands and your arms and your legs, and then over the course of the next year, you were stuck in this kind of hellish nursing home, as it were. Is that?
I was in there for 2 years.
Yeah. And you had an extraordinary experience one day as they were taking you down in a wheelchair to hose you down, as the way that they cleaned you. You want to tell us about that?
Well, I have to preface that by saying that for the year before that, I had started meditating. I'd been deeply depressed because I thought at that point my life was over. I would never, the doctors had told me I'd never walk again and so on. But I began meditating and reading spiritual books by Ramana Maharshi and so on, and ended up spending about 10 or 12 hours a day just in deep meditation, going into a state that people talk about as no mind, where you have no thoughts at all and you have no mind.
And this,
actually, your body seems to disappear, or you leave your body, you're just kind of in a pure, empty beingness or awareness.
And this was a state that
all those me down one night after about a year of that meditation. And I wasn't in a meditative state at that time, but as they were wheeling me back down the hall after the shower, I had this extraordinary sensation that something was radiating in my chest. It was like a spring, like a mountain spring kind of coming up out of nowhere. And it was a wonderful sensation. It was like I had a sun in my chest, but there was no light involved. It was just the radiance. And I started to wonder what it was. They put me back in my room. I was sitting in the wheelchair. And it suddenly came to me that what I was experiencing was bliss. And over time, I realized that this bliss was not just in my chest, but that it extended throughout my entire room and then out through the community and through the planet and into the entire universe, and that this was an invisible stuff, I guess you could say, that permeates and saturates and interpenetrates everything that exists, almost like atoms, except it has no material substance. And this bliss, I realized, is always there, but it's invisible. And it came to my mind that people looking for enlightenment or for God are like fish swimming in the water going, what's this water we always hear about?
Yeah.
Fish are never aware of the environment they live in because it's there all the time and before they come and after they go. And in the same way, I realized that this invisible, infinite substance or stuff is eternally present. It's there before I was born. It was there before my parents were born. And it will always be here, even after this world comes and goes. And
it's remarkable. Michael, in you know, there's the old Hindu prayer, Aditya Hridayam Punyam Sarshatra Vinashana, the God is the light in the heart, in my heart, in the center of my chest, that you talked about that. There's in the Book of Thomas, Jesus talks about lift a rock, I am there, split wood, I am there, that I am the all. Do you think that this is what you were experiencing? This the thing that the saints and messiahs and enlightened people of history, this awakening that they have described?
Right. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's a mistake to limit the idea that only saints and messiahs and so on can have this experience. Actually, what I really found out was it's normal, it's ordinary, it's not something special. It's going on all the time, and it's just that we're not aware of it. But once you become aware of it, then it's there. It's everywhere. It's one thing, and that one thing is the entire universe. And one time this really hit me was when a nurse was bending over my bed, tucking me into bed, and I looked into her eyes, and I realized that the same thing that was looking out of her eyes was the thing that was looking out of my eyes, and that was this pure emptiness, which I could also call fullness or consciousness. And I realized that consciousness is everything. Consciousness is all there is. There is only consciousness. Or if you want to use another word, you can say there is only spirit, or there is only God, because that's what that is.
It's like,
and it's an experience that we have with us all the time, but we're not aware of it, except rarely. I mean, I realized that throughout my life there have been thousands of times when, for flashes of seconds, I'd become aware of that feeling, like jumping off high bridges would give me a feeling where I would just kind of forget about my body, forget about my mind, and go into this total state of emptiness or awareness or consciousness without content, just pure consciousness, just pure awareness with no body, no mind, no content. And it brought joy. It brought wonderful joy, and it still does. And we all have it. It's all, I mean, it's flowing and radiating through all of us at all times. And all we have to do is become aware of it.
Just right now. And that's another tradition, the Jewish tradition. There's the prayer Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. All is God is one. It's all this one thing. It's extraordinary insight. Michael, after you had this this awakening in the hospital, did you just hang out in the state all the time, or did it recede, and did you have to bring it back, and what's been your experience since then?
Well, at first, as I say, I practiced going into the state of no mind, where I would see. I had a roommate who was dying of Parkinsonism, and he kept his TV going from dawn until late night, and also this nursing home was full of people dying from Alzheimer's, and it was a very noisy, distracting place to be in. So I had to kind of go into that, like you do in a flotation tank. I had to go inside myself, and I found that the deeper I went inside my body, that there was an opening into this emptiness. And when you went into the emptiness, it was no longer inside or outside. It was a place that had no before and no after, because it was always now. It's a place that had no beginning, no end. It's eternal. And as I say, it's pure emptiness, pure silence. But also, emptiness gives you a misperception, because it's also solid the whole way through. And what that solid thing is one, which is the entire thing. This universe and other universes, everything, and that all these things that appear like our lives and our experiences are, in a sense, illusions. Like it's like looking at a movie screen. We go in and sit down and look at a movie, and we see what's happening on the screen, and we become identified with that. Cop drama or whatever.
Michael, I've got to ask you to pause that right there, and we're going to take a break for just a minute. When we come back from this break, Michael, I'd like you to talk about how our listeners, how individuals might be able to access this state. We're talking with Michael Hutchison, author of The Book of Floating, Exploring the Private Sea, and many other books. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stay tuned.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If there's one rule to this game, everybody's gonna name it. Be cool.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with Michael Hutchison about his experience in Santa Fe, where he lives, the author of The Book of Floating, Exploring the Private Sea. And, Michael, we have, before we get into it, we've got about 4 minutes here in this segment before we wrap this up, and I want you to get to the book. We also have a caller here on the line, Brian in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. If it's okay with you, we'll take his call.
Sure.
Okay. Hey, Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. How are you? Ever since I was 15 or 16, I've always been interested in psychic development and hypnosis and things like that, but very recently, I guess 2 years ago when I read The Prophet's Way, I look for answers, and I've been meditating recently, and I kind of understand what he's saying. I feel, it's going to sound kind of weird, but I feel like I'm a human meat bag, like I'm just this soul inside this body that really, it exists, but it doesn't. I kind of feel like I'm a finger of God. I think you might have said something like that in The Prophet's Way, but I do. I totally understand where he's coming from, and I think, you know, it's horrible what has happened, or what has happened, but I guess everything happens for a reason, and
yeah. Okay.
It's just, you know, I'm happy to be here today.
Okay. So. Thank you, Brian. Thanks for the validation. Michael, do you think, I mean, you know, if there are so many people throughout history, from St. Francis, I mean, Mother Teresa talked about this. Just before she died, she gave an interview where she said that when she was 17 years old, she had an experience, and she described it in ways very similar to what you described, and that it so moved her that it caused her to devote her life to humanity. You know, if so many people have described this experience, this is not an unusual thing or an absolutely impossible thing. How can people achieve this? How can people find this? I mean, this seems to me the kernel of the, not the religious experience, but the truly spiritual experience, or the experience of perhaps, I mean, setting aside religion, spirituality, mythology, and all that, maybe just the pure experience of reality. Michael?
Well, it is the pure experience of reality, and what reality is consciousness, spirit, God, whatever you want to call it. It's this one thing that is all of us and everything. And the only way you can really experience that, I think, the way I found it was, as it says in the Bible, to be born, you must die. And that doesn't mean a literal death. That means letting go of who you are. For me, it was letting go of Mike, letting go of Mike's ego, letting go of holding on to the world as if it were real, when I realized that it was illusory. And to let go, really, you have to kind of let yourself, let that person die and go into just pure primordial being or consciousness without content. And one way of doing that, which an Indian sage pointed out, is you can start by just becoming aware of I am and forget everything else and just remember every time you can, I am. And that's not like a mantra to repeat over and over again. It's
being present.
It's a sensory experience to have.
Michael, we've got about a minute left here. Your book is called The Book of Floating, Exploring the Private Sea. You want to tell us about flotation tanks in 30 seconds?
Well, the flotation tank is a big box enclosed filled with about 10 inches of water, saturated with about 800 pounds of Epsom salts. So you float on top of it like a rubber ducky in a bathtub. And
in the dark.
When the door is closed, it's totally black. So you have no light, no sound, and when your body is floating on top of the water, you lose all sense of gravity. And then, since the water is warm to body temperature, you lose a sense of where your body ends and the water begins, until ultimately you get the feeling that you're just floating without weight, gravity-free, in a black, infinite, empty space.
And this is a starting point. I'm sorry we're out of time here, Michael, for this segment.
Too,
but we will have you back again. This is great. I appreciate it very much. Michael Hutchison, the author of the Book of Floating, Exploring the Private Sea. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Tom. Talk to you again.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as a
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A significant dilemma for some 1,200 workers at two furnace and air conditioning factories in Syracuse, New York, run by the Carrier Corporation. Carrier announced those plants will close at the end of this month and much of the work will move overseas, but the company's contract with the unions at the factories requires Carrier to provide job retraining services for up to 4 years after the workforce is laid off. However, the U.S. Department of Labor says because Carrier's paying for the workers' education, they are disqualified from collecting unemployment if they participate in it. New York's own Department of Labor is petitioning the feds to reconsider their decision. The state's congressional delegation may get involved.
Outsourcing is a good thing, according to the Information Technology Association of America, which says sending U.S. jobs overseas to save money on labor costs will ultimately lower inflation, create jobs, and boost productivity in the United States. The ITAA also found migration of tech jobs to low-paid foreigners has eliminated 104,000 American jobs, nearly 3% of the positions in the U.S. technology industry. But the report predicts economic recovery will ultimately increase increase the number of IT jobs. Little comfort for those currently out of work.
Last week, part-time workers at Walt Disney World in Florida ratified their first union contract. But yesterday, a Disney World resort reopened, and at this one, the union workforce has been decimated. The $92 million complex named Shades of Green is open to military vacationers only and closed in 2002 due to low bookings. Most of the union staff were laid off. On the new staff, only one out of every 100 workers has a union job. Disney profits twice because Shades of Green is exempt from state and federal taxes due to its military-exclusive clientele.
15,000 home care workers providing long-term care to seniors in Illinois may get a pay increase. Currently, these workers are paid 20% less than those who care for people with disabilities. Now, Illinois State House members showed overwhelming support for the parity pay bill, voting 111-0. The legislation would raise wages, making them equal for workers caring for seniors and those caring for people with disabilities. The legislation now moves on to the Senate.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of big strikes in the United States rose last year, according to new figures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 129,200 workers went on strike for a month or more, collectively sacrificing 4.1 million work days. That's more than a six-fold increase from 2002, due in large part to walkouts involving supermarket workers in several states. Strikes that involved 1,000 workers or more lasted an average of 22 days last year, although the majority of those ended in a month or less.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Makes a move of which we don't approve. Who is it that always intervenes? UN and OAS, they have their place, I guess. But first, send the Marines. We'll send them all we've got. John Wayne and Randolph Scott. Remember those exciting fighting scenes. To the shores of Tripoli, but not to Mississippi. What do? We send the Marines.
Yes. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here. Tom Lehrer there. A classic piece, 26 minutes before the hour. Here's the headline. The headline from the story. Melancholy Saddam longs to shut down a newspaper. Former dictator in deep funk, French lawyer says, is the subhead. And I just have to share this with you. The U.S. is shuttering, that is the closing by the United States, of an Iraqi newspaper sent Saddam Hussein into a deep funk, his French lawyer said today, as the former Iraqi dictator increasingly longs to shut down a newspaper himself. Lawyer Jacques Verger said, shutting down newspapers was an activity that Saddam always enjoyed. When he heard that the U.S. had done it without him, it was a bitter pill to swallow. Monsieur Verger said that when he first told the Iraqi madman that the U.S. had padlocked the Baghdad paper, Saddam was despondent and consolable, shouting, "That should have been me!" Saddam then demanded to speak to the U.S. Interim Administrator in Iraq, L. Paul Bremer III, to give Mr. Bremer a list of helpful tips on how to shut down newspapers in the future. As Monsieur Virgin said, Saddam felt that the shutting down of this newspaper was the work of amateurs. For one thing, when you close a paper down, you never explain why you do it. That's a huge no-no. But so far, Mr. Bremer has rebuffed Saddam's offer of assistance, saying the U.S. was, quote, perfectly well equipped to shut down newspapers on our own. Thank you very much, end quote. All of this has left Saddam increasingly depressed, Monsieur Virgin said. He says, quote, telling Saddam Hussein he can't shut down a newspaper is like taking away Tiger Woods' golf clubs. It's just plain cruel, end quote. In other news, Condoleezza Rice announced today that her 9/11 testimony would be scheduled to coincide with the finale of American Idol, the decisive NCAA championship game, and the reading of the verdict in the Kobe Bryant trial. Yes, it is April 1st. That's Dave Borowitz, I believe it is. BorowitzReport.com, the marvelous site on the web for news and information. You know, there's a lot in the news about talk radio these days, and, you know, Could it be, is it possible that liberal talk radio will work? Well, you know, setting aside the fact that, sometime this week or next, I believe it's next week, this show will be a year old, and I've been, you know, I've been on the air for 30 years, but doing this particular type of radio on and off over the course of 30 years. But anyhow, here's from 1933, Father Coughlin, the very first talk radio show host in America, 1933, saying, and this was his endorsement of Franklin Roosevelt. This is remarkable.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is almost preposterous on my part to advocate your loyalty to Franklin D. Roosevelt.
This is because Father Coughlin had spent a lot of time kind of bashing Roosevelt. We'll get to that in a moment.
The events of the past 3 weeks are eloquent in themselves. Our laborers are being restored to remunerative operation.
So this is 1933, and he's endorsing this, the Works Progress Administration, the idea of Social Security, putting people back to work.
Our factories are open. The prices of our commodities have been raised. Why, may I ask you? Simply because the money changers are being driven from the temple.
Yes, indeed.
Simply
folks.
Because the outworn gold standard which held you and myself in bondage for generations has evaporated.
Keep in mind, back then, Roosevelt actually made it illegal to hold gold for, and it was in the United States for quite some years, quite a number of years afterwards, which was a very controversial move, one I'm not sure I agree with. But anyway, here we go.
Into the mists of the past.
Into the mists of the past.
The great advantages obtained through the National Recovery Act are more or less insignificant compared to the greater advantages which the future holds for us once the fulfillment of Franklin Roosevelt's monetary policy will become history.
Now, this is a real, I mean, you know, Rush Limbaugh claims credit for getting, Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., and George Bush Jr. elected president. He doesn't take the blame for Bill Clinton, but he's actually claimed credit for these guys. Here, this was one third of Americans. Talk about cumes and shares and stuff. One third of Americans in 1933 listened to Father Coughlin every day. Here's his wrap-up.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the day, despite all opposition to the contrary, that you remain steadfast behind the one man who can save this civilization of ours. It is either Roosevelt or ruin.
It is either Roosevelt or ruin. Yes, indeed. Well, Father Coughlin changed his tune. I have to share the other side of it with you, just, you know, for the purpose of balance here and for those of you who may be curious. Father Coughlin had a falling out with Roosevelt and went on some pretty good rants about it. He was particularly upset about the idea of Social Security. The 1933 Act that he had just talked about was the, you know, making gold illegal and things. But then along came Social Security, and that was it for Father Coughlin. What? You know, this is the business of the churches to take care of needy people. And Father Coughlin, of course, was a Catholic priest, and he just went nuts. Here's Father Coughlin.
And therefore, choosing right instead of might, choosing to be on the side of justice instead of on the side of modern capitalism with its intermingling with socialism and communism, I stand before you tonight to warn you.
Oh, to warn you. This is a dangerous thing, this Social Security.
Careless of what the future holds to me, that this relief that has failed to relieve.
This is called Social Security relief.
By pounding up its taxation.
Yes, we had to pay for it.
By doubling its assessment upon the payrolls of the nation. By finding its way into the grocer shops where you purchase your food. This relief that lives upon a sucker's taking from the people every penny they own is due to crumble and fall Before 1 year from this April. You think you know what depression is?
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet, he said. Wait until Social Security. He was really upset about Social Security. And he ranted on, in fact.
How long can it last for this Federal Reserve Bank to invent and coin and issue its own bogus money against the debts of a nation? And then when the bond market drops as it's dropping now, print more fresh $5 bills to buy in its own bonds. Oh, there's a law of compensation, and there's an accounting to be held, an accounting that shall make the depression of 1929 seem as a prosperity when it breaks upon you.
Yes, indeed, folks. There's an accounting to be held, and it's that awful Social Security and so the world's first liberal talk radio host became the world's first conservative talk radio host. And there you just now, you know, here I just gave you it's about 7 years of history there, whap, just like that, the history of talk radio. And, of course, then back in 86, Alan Berg was on the air in 34 states, broadcasting out of Denver, incredibly popular, liberal talk show host. He was listened to from coast to not quite from coast to coast, but, you know, this was the early days of syndication. Back when if a radio station wanted to carry a show, they had to hook up ISDN lines and carry it over telephone lines. It was an incredible hassle. And he was in 34 states and with liberal talk radio. Alan Berg, a good Democrat, a very, very left-wing Democrat. And one day he walked out of his house and two guys machine-gunned him to death. And about a year later, Rush Limbaugh came along and the rest is history. So that's, in a nutshell, our 30-second history of talk radio. And isn't it remarkable, by the way, that the folks who would say, you know, that this social security thing, this dangerous, is, you know, it's still dangerous. It's terrible. We need to put it in private hands. It shouldn't be government controlled. How dare they be able to take taxes? And they're back. They're back, friends, and they want to privatize Social Security. Yes, they want to put it in the hands of people like Michael Milken and Ken Lay. And it boggles the mind. Doesn't it just boggle the mind? The whole con agenda. Let's take Medicare and let's make it voluntary starting in 2006. Now, we're not going to do it now. There's an election coming up, you know. But 2006, it's voluntary. And let's give a couple $100 billion to the corporations who just gave us millions of dollars. And let's actually even have the government with tax dollars pay for advertising, telling people how wonderful the new Medicare program is. And once we've got them on this scam, then we start on the Social Security one. But first, we've got to get reelected. So you guys in the financial district, you better give big bucks to the Bush campaign. And in fact, they are the largest industry. In 2000, it was the oil industry. Well, they got their payoff. They got their pipeline across Afghanistan. They got their oil wells in Iraq. And now the largest industry, one of the largest industries, as of a month or so ago, last time I looked, the largest industry supporting the Bush campaign was the financial services industry. Well, they're going to declare war on us, on our income, and march in like they marched into Iraq and march into our Social Security funds and privatize them, yes, indeed. Okay. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. If you would like to be on the radio program today, Tom Hartman here with you 15 minutes before the hour. Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, this month's edition, the April edition of Harper's Magazine, has an article in it on how to rig voting machines, and it lays out four pretty credible ways in which any high-tech person can do it. And so I'm trying to bring us back to that ugly reality, because if you can't win enough votes with crooked contributions and deception, there is always the backup plan. And now at least I guess even liberals can learn how to rig voting machines. Maybe they'll have to.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's great. Let us know how to do it, and you know, we'll rig a few elections, and then all of a sudden the cons in Congress will say, hey, wait a minute, we thought we owned this technology.
Well, every high-tech person should then refer to page 87 in this month's Harper's Magazine, because it spells out how we can do it.
Okay, well done. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for passing that along. I appreciate it. Fox News in the Iraq War. This is Bernie Sanders, who will be on our program tomorrow on the second hour of the show, as he usually is on Fridays, barring any wacky events going on in the House of Representatives. Bernie Sanders wrote a piece, which is, I see it here, published on BuzzFlash. I'm not sure where else it was published. BuzzFlash guest contribution. Fox News and the Iraq War, fact versus foxition, as in fiction, right? Foxion. Foxtion, Foxion. One of the leading media corporations that advocated for U.S. invasion of Iraq was News Corp. I'm reading Bernie's thing, and its subsidiary to Fox Television, Rupert Murdoch's Fox News, acted as a megaphone for the Bush administration's march to war. Over and over, Fox News hosts and contributors made misleading comments, many of which have proven to be 100% false. The question now is whether or not Fox hosts and contributors will admit they were wrong and apologize to their viewers for giving them unfair and unbalanced information. And then he goes through pages of these things. I mean, it's just incredible. November 13th, 2002, Sean Hannity, we can handle a situation in Iraq which I think needs to be dealt with in fairly short order, and we still finish the job of protecting against Al-Qaeda and another attack. I don't see why we're incapable, really, of doing both and doing both well. And on it goes. Fact, Afghanistan remains unstable. Last February, the UN released a report stating that opium production in Afghanistan is contributing to the instability and terror campaigns in Afghanistan, not to mention heroin, you know, an epidemic of heroin addiction all over the planet. I mean, it's just incredible. I don't want to be reading too much of Sean Hannity. Britt Hume, on August 9th, 2002, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Saddam Hussein has been pursuing aggressively weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. Fact, says Congressman Sander. The Iraq Survey Group has reported that inspectors have found no evidence that Iraq was pursuing or stockpiling chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. As lead inspector Dr. David Kaye concluded, quote, I'm personally convinced that there were not large stockpiles of newly produced weapons of mass destruction. We don't find the people, the documents, or the physical plants that you would expect to find if the production was going on. Here, Morton Kondracki on Fox Special Report with Britt Hume. There has to be a substantial chemical weapons manufacturing plant someplace. Now, maybe it's a brewery or something like that, the January 24, 2003. Wrong. Bill O'Reilly, it's in March of 2003. Bill O'Reilly told Good Morning America viewers, quote, if the Americans go in and overthrow Saddam Hussein and it's clean, he has nothing, I will apologize to the nation and I will not trust the Bush administration again. Fact, according to Bernie Sanders, no weapons of mass destruction have been found. According to Reuters, the administration's handpicked weapons expert has come up with no WMD. Well, you've already got that. So, and it's a remarkable, I recommend you check it out, BuzzFlash.com, guest commentary by Congressman Bernie Sanders. This long list of factions versus facts. It's the Tom Hartman Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Nitrates from the Midwest are a major nuisance in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every spring, a vast expanse of the Gulf of Mexico loses so much oxygen that people describe it as a dead zone where fish cannot survive. The problem begins when nutrients come down the Mississippi River and feed huge blooms of algae. Some experts say the dead zone would cover less of the Gulf if healthy wetlands covered more of the upper Midwest. The nutrients that cause the problem are nitrates that are used as fertilizer on farm fields. When too much fertilizer is used, the nitrates get into groundwater. From there, they seep into tributaries of the Mississippi, and then they're on their way to the Gulf. Jean Barr is a hydrogeology professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and she's an expert on contaminants in groundwater. She says nitrates travel easily in groundwater, and that's one of several reasons why they're a problem.
First of all, we're adding nitrogen to the landscape, and so there's a huge excess overall because nitrate is so soluble in water. And we are farming right up to the edges of streams, which means that the distance that the groundwater moves through the subsurface before it gets to the stream is fairly short.
Microbes in waterlogged soil near these farm fields will chew up nitrates and break them down into harmless nitrogen gas. But a lot of wetlands in the upper Midwest have been drained and turned into farm fields. Barr says that's short-circuited the natural processes that break down the nitrates in groundwater. Experts say restoration of wetlands in the upper Midwest is an essential part of reducing the impact of nitrates on the Gulf of Mexico. That problem is widely regarded as a national issue because it affects one of the most important fisheries in U.S. waters. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. You're in the Truth Arena. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 5 minutes, 4 minutes before the hour. And, I just, something just hit me. Actually, it just occurred to me, I don't know how I had managed not to put two and two together on this. And I'm sure it's something that when it happens, a lot of us are going to be scratching our heads about and wondering what the consequences of it are. And that is that the deal that the White House just cut in exchange for Condoleezza Rice's testimony, where they said, you know, okay, we will throw Condi to the dogs or to the wolves or whatever the phrase is. We will allow her to testify under oath and in public. Of course, as far as I can tell, a date has not been announced. I think they're waiting to find out what's going to be the date that the Michael Jackson or Kobe Bryant or Martha Stewart or, you know, there's going to be some big news event that day. I can virtually guarantee. But anyhow, we're going to let Condi testify. But we want in writing from you, number one, and this one I've talked about on the air before, number one, we want an assurance from you that you're not going to ask anybody else in this administration to testify under oath, including the president or the vice president. So George and Dick don't have to testify under oath. But the second part of it, that just, sometimes you just say, how could I have not noticed that? The second part of the deal was that President Bush will only testify in secret and not under oath, but will only testify with Dick Cheney sitting next to him. I don't know. Did you catch that in the news? This is a fact that Bush's testimony he will not testify alone. He will only testify if Dick Cheney can sit next to him and participate in the questioning. They must be questioned together. I'm scratching my head going, ha, 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 ha. The George Bush sock puppet will speak again. Are we going to find the truth? Are we going to find out if the president was asleep at the switch, if he was trying to prove to his mommy that his daddy didn't do a good job in Iraq and he could do better? I mean, when are we going to find out what really happened? Or do we maybe already know? It's just one of those unpleasant realities. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, your radio support group of, by, and for we the people.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. A burst of violence against Americans in Iraq on Wednesday made March the second deadliest month for U.S. troops since George W. Bush declared an end to combat last May. 5 U.S. troops and 4 American civilians were killed on the final day of the month, just over a year after American forces launched the invasion to topple Saddam Hussein's government. At least 48 troops died in Iraq during March, up from 21 in February and 46 in January. 19 were killed by roadside bombs or improvised explosive devices, according to military records. George W. Bush expressed disappointment on Wednesday at OPEC's oil output cut and pressed allies inside and outside the cartel to fill any gap in supply to prevent higher prices after Democratic rival John Kerry accused Bush of ignoring record pump prices. While initially raising no public objections to OPEC's decision, the White House later voiced its displeasure at the production cut. Bush's timid reaction to OPEC stands at odds with his 2000 campaign promise to take on OPEC on behalf of American consumers. At the time, spokesman Scott McClellan said rising gas prices were a sign of failed leadership. The Washington Post reports that on September 11, 2001, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was scheduled to outline a Bush administration policy that would address the threats and problems of today and the day after, not the world of yesterday, but the focus was largely on missile defense, not terrorism from Islamic radicals. The address was designed to promote missile defense as the cornerstone of a new national security strategy and contained no mention of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, or Islamic extremist groups, according to former U.S. officials who have seen the text. The text also implicitly challenged the Clinton administration's policy, saying it did not do enough about the real threat, long-range missiles. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. senators and representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
A man was charged with robbing two banks less than a day after getting out of prison for a botched 2001 convenience store robbery in which he held a can of ravioli under his shirt to simulate a gun. Thomas Rakowski was arrested Tuesday morning a few minutes after someone robbed the First Commonwealth Bank in Toronto, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. Police said an alarm system sent a distress call directly to a dispatch center and helped them quickly locate Rakowski and his vehicle, which matched witness descriptions. Police said he also had a note demanding money from a teller. This is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
The Bushites seem to enjoy the fun game of preemptive regime change, in which they shout weapons of mass destruction before attacking a country with the full might of the U.S. military, tossing out the old leaders, installing some new ones, occupying the country, and calling this democracy. Now, however, they are saying that regime change need not be limited to nations that might pose some military threat to our country. For the past couple of years, these messianic global manipulators have quietly been out to topple Hugo Chavez, the duly elected president of Venezuela. What threat does Chavez pose to us? None. Zero. Zip. What's his crime? He's too lefty, not beholden to the oil giants operating in Venezuela, not properly obedient to U.S. power, and worst of all, the Bushites just don't like him. So they've been scheming with Venezuelan elites to oust him. They exulted in 2002 when an armed coup overthrew Chavez's elected government, but White House elation turned to sour grapes only 2 days later when the coup turned out to be a Keystone Cops effort and the people of Venezuela rallied to put their man Chavez back in his presidency. But this didn't stop the White House. Reams of internal documents have now surfaced showing a startling effort by the Bushites to undermine the legitimate government of Venezuela, a blatantly anti-democratic effort that, ironically, they rationalize by asserting that Chavez is not democratic enough to suit them. Last year alone, they funneled $1 million of our tax dollars into opposition groups seeking to overthrow Chavez and install Venezuela's moneyed class in power. One of the Bushites' documents claims that the future of Venezuelan democracy, quote, depends on the rebuilding of healthy and responsive political parties that can effectively channel citizen demands. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, let's try to accomplish that here. If our own government reflected citizen demands, it wouldn't be messing with Venezuela.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. by calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Show, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or the Daily Memo from Roger Ailes. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton has some thoughts on the Bush administration. Hear what she has to say.
For more than a year now, said that we didn't come in with enough troops. We didn't have enough presence there. I don't believe anyone seriously doubted we would be successful militarily.
Right.
But I do think that the administration thought that it would be a somewhat easier task after the military action to topple Saddam was over.
Maybe that's why they didn't plan for anything afterwards.
To stabilize the country and create some kind of transition government.
Yeah, maybe that's why they didn't protect anything other than the oil ministry and the oil wells.
There have been a lot of mistakes made.
Or maybe they were just dumb.
On the planning and many decisions that really overlooked the considered opinion of people who had a lot of knowledge about Iraq and the region.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tragedy in my mind is the number of members of the United States Senate and House of Representatives who listened to Robert Byrd's impassioned arguments about why we would be committing a form of national suicide by attacking a country that had not attacked us and that didn't have any, that didn't represent a demonstrated and an obvious risk to us. That the rest of the world was saying, hey, you know, we don't see, you know, we're paying attention to Hans Blix there in the United Nations when he testifies, and he says he hasn't found anything so far, so we're not really sure that we want to go with you on this thing. I mean, there's 227 years of American history. I really, arguably, you could say the last couple thousand years of civilization have, by and large, suggested that you only attack people when they attack you first, or when, you know, it's just really obvious they're going to at any minute now. We need to err on the side of caution, but you've got 350 inspectors running all over the country looking for anything. You've totally wiped out their Air Force. They don't have a single airplane left. Their military is in tatters. You've been bombing them continuously for 9 years. They've been under military, under economic sanctions, so that a 500,000 children every year are dying of mostly waterborne diseases because we bombed their water factories, and then we said chlorine is a chemical that can be used to make dangerous gases, so they can't chlorinate their water anymore. Oh, but they represent a threat. Yeah. A real threat. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the show today. And Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a great deal, Tom. As you
so well pointed out in the last hour, the sock puppet is only going to speak to the 9/11 Commission if he can sit right next to Uncle Dick. You know, any investigator will tell you right out front, if you want to find the truth, the last thing you do is question different witnesses together. It's called tag team testimony, and the people being questioned, you know, are assured that the answers are going to completely complement one another's, and there's no chance that the two, in this case Cheney and Bush, are going to contradict one another. My question is, who's going to be supplying most of the answers, I wonder?
Yeah. Gee, you wonder that, Chris. You know, I'm really curious, too. I'm just baffled. I can't figure that one out. Yeah. I just, you know, might it be George, do you think?
Could be. You know, I still
think, I don't think so.
That we being those on the left, should start loudly and publicly pushing a list of questions for the 9/11 Commission to ask Condi Rice, just in case they missed anything. You know, start publishing some questions that she should answer, and
yeah,
maybe she'll have to.
It's happening. I mean, the Center for American Progress has just laid the foundation for that very, very brilliantly. And you know, the liberal think tank out there, and the families of the 9/11 victims.
Yeah.
And now we've got these dueling families, right, and all this stuff. But anyway, you know, the outspoken families who had argued for the creation of this commission in the first place, and therefore I think they have some right to be considered the families who are involved with this. Have submitted questions. The question is going to be if these commissioners are going to follow through on them. And now we find out that one of the lead commissioners is on the board of an oil company that is in business with Saddam Hussein. Osama bin Laden's father and brothers.
This wouldn't happen on Law and Order, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Take it easy, man.
There you go. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. That story flew by this morning, and I thought, well, do I rant about this or not? Being on the board of directors of a company that has a business relationship with another company on whose board somebody else sits is pretty thin. So I figured I'm not gonna make a big deal out of that. There's enough to make big deals out of. I mean, there is so much obvious, you know, so many obvious lies, so much obvious obfuscation, so much obvious twisting of the truth, and obvious conflicts of interest that you don't there's some of these things you don't even need to go to. Here, for example, you would think that the administration would be in favor of, their whole argument for the Patriot Act and all this stuff is, we've got to stop these terrorists. We've got to get access to their funding sources. We've got to shut down their funding. We've got to go ahead. And so you would think that they would have some sort of a plan to do that, and that they would say, what's the best financial investigative agency that we have in the United States that has access to all the financial records and all the financial documents of every person in the country and of every corporation in the country and every nonprofit in the country? They make a living looking at numbers. Who would that be? It'd be the Internal Revenue Service, right? And wouldn't it make sense to have the IRS looking at the papers of various nonprofits that might be affiliated with Osama bin Laden and friends? Yeah, I mean, it's logical. But see, the problem is it's not ideological. You've got a bunch of guys in the White House and in Congress now and the Supreme Court who believe that destroying government to pave the way for rule by the rich and corporate rule in America is more important even than stopping terrorism. Here, this article in the New York Times yesterday by David K. Johnson, titled IRS Request for More Terrorism Investigators is Denied. The Bush administration, I just read you the first two paragraphs here, it says it all. The Bush administration has scuttled a plan to increase by 50% the number of criminal financial investigators working to disrupt the finances of Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other terrorist organizations. Why?
to save $12 million. We're going to save $12 million. Isn't that nice? We're spending more than that on these Medicare ads that are running on TV that are thinly veiled commercials for the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign, soon to be the Bush-Giuliani re-election campaign. Really, it's the Bush-Laura re-election campaign right now. Those are the two who appear in the ads. Anyhow, the Internal Revenue Service, says the New York Times, had asked for 80 more criminal investigators beginning in October to join the 160 it has already assigned to penetrate the shadowy networks that terrorist groups use to finance plots like the 9/11 attacks and the recent train bombings in Madrid. But the administration did not include them in the president's proposed budget for the 2005 fiscal year. Did not. Here we got Representative Earl Pomeroy. He's a Democrat from North Dakota. He's scratching his head going, What? Wait a minute. We're going to go after terrorists' money. We're going to go after their funding. Well, here's his actual quote. He said, "These are some very tough questions that have to be answered about why the decision was made to eliminate these positions. Because going after the financial underpinnings of terrorist activity is crucial to rooting terrorism out and defeating it." Well, gee, Congressman Pomeroy, it almost seems like, it almost seems like maybe they're not interested in knowing about the activities of some of these organizations. Perhaps they don't really want to know the details of the nonprofit groups set up by the members of the Bin Laden family in the United States. Maybe they don't want to kick over that barrel. This is going to feed the conspiracy folks, and perhaps rightly so. Why does this administration want to save $12 million by cutting out investigators specifically looking at nonprofits associated with terrorism? Maybe it's because they'll investigate all nonprofits, and maybe Jerry Falwell will get in their sights. Why aren't they looking at the nonprofits that are involved with the terrorism of shooting, murdering American citizens, physicians who happen to work in abortion clinics? Why are they not looking at the terrorism of these guys down in Texas that were just recently busted, sitting on just absolutely tons of stuff? I mean, it was just incredible. It didn't even make the news. Why? Because they were white Christians in Texas. Terrorists. Here's an interesting piece by Fred Kaplan on Slate called "The Dogs That Didn't Bark." He talks about the Sherlock Holmes story, The Silver Blaze, where Sherlock Holmes solved the mystery by noticing that the guard dogs were not barking. He says, therefore it must be an inside job. That basically was the thing. Well, who is not now going after Richard Clark in this administration? And what does that tell you? It's really interesting. George Tenet, the head of the CIA, and Colin Powell, Secretary of State, are not going after Richard Clark. In fact, Powell said on the NewsHour, in Jim Lehrer's NewsHour, "I know Mr. Clark. I've known him for many years. He's a very smart guy. He's served his nation very well. He's an expert in these matters. His book is not a complete story, but I'm not attributing any bad motives to it." Colin Powell saying, if there's a campaign, he says, "I'm not aware of any campaign against Mr. Clark, and I am not a member." That's apparently, Colin Powell is not on the auto dial button on Karl Rove's telephone. But the guys who are in a position to know, they're not going after him. It's just the attack dogs. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
You.
What?
Who is Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
In twilight glow I see blue eyes crying in the rain. When we kissed goodbye and parted, I knew we'd never meet again.
Oh, what a great way. It does, yeah, it does slow things down, I suppose, a little bit. Anyhow, welcome back. It's the Real Free Speech Zone. It's the Tom Hartman radio program with you. It's here, this, the 20th of March of this year, a report from a local CBS affiliate in Texas. Catch this.
It's a story involving white supremacists armed with poison gas in East Texas. The case is so sensitive that President Bush received daily intelligence briefings about it. And tonight, CBS 11 investigator Robert Riggs uncovers the details for us. Robert?
Tracy, the underground activities of a New Hampshire militia supporter in Tyler set off national security alarms.
National security? Did you hear about this? Where? I mean, can you imagine? I mean, if they had found this stuff in Iraq, you would have, you know, full news would be, oh, we found it, everything's fine, wait, you know, 600 dead Americans have been vindicated.
Terrorism investigators suspect Bill Krar may have been a traveling salesman who peddled deadly sodium cyanide bombs across the country.
Across the country! We have domestic terrorists in America. I mean, this is a real news story from the CBS affiliate in Texas, March 20th.
Secretly operating behind the scenes in East Texas outside Tyler, white supremacists produced deadly cyanide bombs capable of killing hundreds of people.
Wonder how far Tyler is from Crawford.
Inside these rented storage units, federal agents discovered the chemicals and plans used for making the same poison gas once used by prison death chambers. These photographs obtained by CBS 11 News show an arsenal of illegal machine guns, boxes filled with a half million rounds of ammunition, 100 homemade bombs, gas masks.
Now, you're getting all this stuff. Now, why is it that the administration didn't call a news conference and tell the nation, hey, we found some terrorists? Well, maybe because it's one of their, what do you call it, affiliate groups or pure group. What is it? Somebody's on the same side you are. You know, the Jesse Helms of the world. Anyway.
Antidotes for nerve agents and a Ku Klux Klan calling card.
Yeah, there you go. That, I think, might be the answer. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program today. And let me, where did my window go? My goodness, I have lost it. Ah, there it is. Hey, welcome to the program. It's Jerry in North Carolina. What's up, Jerry?
Good afternoon. I noticed in the newspaper today that Kander has bit the dust again. Bush is refusing to let his health policy advisor testify before the House Ways and Means Committee.
This being about Thomas Scully threatening Stephen Foster?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the question that I'd like to ask is, why did this guy leave a $675,000 a year job to take the head of the Medicare job, you know, push through, you know, help write and push through this thing, threaten his underling if he tells the true price, and then as soon as the bill gets passed, he goes back to work in the private sector for big bucks? What are your, Jerry, apparently we've lost Jerry. Okay. Yeah, and that's the bottom line for me is that, you know, here we have, I mean, this isn't just the Bush administration hiding things and invoking executive privilege, but it's like, what is it that they're covering up by invoking executive privilege? This is not rocket science. It's not a secret. The information is out there. Why isn't the media talking about it? Why isn't the media talking about where Scully came from, what he did when he was head of Medicare, and where he is now? He came, $675,000 a year job as the head of the association that represented for-profit hospitals, Bill Frist's money pot. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. Kim in Oklahoma, hang on, we'll be right with you. Stick around.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking...
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A significant dilemma for some 1,200 workers at two furnace and air conditioning factories in Syracuse, New York, run by the Carrier Corporation. Carrier announced those plants will close at the end of this month and much of the work will move overseas, but the company's contract with the unions at the factories requires Carrier to provide job retraining services for up to 4 years after the workforce is laid off. However, the U.S. Department of Labor says because Carrier's paying for the workers' education, they are disqualified from collecting unemployment if they participate in it. New York's own Department of Labor is petitioning the feds to reconsider their decision, and the state's congressional delegation may get involved.
Outsourcing is a good thing, according to the Information Technology Association of America, which says sending U.S. jobs overseas to save money on labor costs will ultimately lower inflation, create jobs, and boost productivity in the United States. The ITAA also found migration of tech jobs to low-paid foreigners has eliminated 104,000 American jobs, nearly 3% of the positions in the U.S. technology industry. But the report predicts economic recovery will ultimately increase the number of IT jobs. Little comfort for those currently out of work.
Last week, part-time workers at Walt Disney World in Florida ratified their first union contract. But yesterday, a Disney World resort reopened, and at this one, the union workforce has been decimated. The $92 million complex named Shades of Green is open to military vacationers only and closed in 2002 due to low bookings. Most of the union staff were laid off. On the new staff, only one out of every 100 workers has a union job. Disney profits twice because Shades of Green is exempt from state and federal taxes due to its military-exclusive clientele.
15,000 home care workers providing long-term care to seniors in Illinois may get a pay increase. Currently, these workers are paid 20% less than those who care for people with disabilities. Now, Illinois State House members showed overwhelming support for the parity pay bill, voting 111-0. The legislation would raise wages, making them equal for workers caring for seniors and those caring for people with disabilities. The legislation now moves on to the Senate.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of big strikes in the United States rose last year, according to new figures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 129,200 workers went on strike for a month or more, collectively sacrificing 4.1 million work days. That's more than a six-fold increase from 2002, due in large part to walkouts involving supermarket workers in several states. Strikes that involved 1,000 workers or more lasted an average of 22 days last year, although the majority of those ended in a month or less.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Bosses of the world unite, let us save the day. Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay. We only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard, and we too sometimes need to paint our homes.
Yes, indeed, bosses of the world unite!
The pressures are incredible.
Oh, it's tough.
No one seems to care.
Just ask Donald Trump.
We moved our plants to Haiti, and now we have to move from there.
Oh, life is miserable.
They're paying for more than $1 a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon, there'll be no place for us to go.
Yes, indeed. Bosses of the World Unite. A great tune there from Jim Turr over at the BlueCanyonProductions.com website. And this is it. I mean, you know, welcome to the consequences of Bill Clinton signing NAFTA and GATT. You know, with a little help from every conservative in the country. The wonders of the Democratic Leadership Council. Whenever you think about, you know, isn't it interesting? India has trade barriers. Why? They want to protect their domestic industries. China has trade barriers. Why? They want to protect their domestic industries. Japan has trade barriers. Why? They want to protect their domestic industries. The United States? No. But we have barriers to people. If you're a human being and you want to leave the United States and live somewhere else, well, it's no problem if you want to leave. Jobs can leave. But if you're a human being and you want to leave Bangladesh and come to the United States, we say, no, you can't do that. Why not? Well, the rationale, frankly, since about the 1920s, well, really, I mean, this really picked up steam in the 1930s during the Great Depression, when they started slamming shut the doors of Ellis Island. The rationale was, we have enough people here already. They're, you know, all our jobs are gone. It's anyhow, I'm going down a road I didn't want to go down here. Let's take a couple calls. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Kim in Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Kim, welcome to the show.
It's good talking with you, sir. I'll tell you, you know, I don't think the Bush administration really cares what we uncover or what scandal happens, because they know one thing. It's called $170 million.
Yeah.
Because an example of this, prior to the weekend, they had done a poll, and Kerry had pulled ahead. Then I think they spent about $10 million advertising, making Kerry look like a tax and spend, and a couple of other things in selected markets. Immediately, Bush pulled right back ahead.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's you know, there's a reason why people advertise. There's a reason why Procter & Gamble spends millions of dollars every year. There's a reason why you see all those ads on TV. It's because they work. I mean, you know, there's basically, you know, two.
And another thing is the reason you might say it's depressing is when you talk to some of these Christians and you talk about the blue skirt and they go ballistic. But when you talk about greed, graft, and corruption, well, they all do it. And one of the reasons is it's not specifically outlined in the Bible that it's wrong.
Well, Kim, I'm not ready to paint all Christians with that brush, but,
no, but
you know, that's the Falwell contingent.
Group,
sure.
You know the group that I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, the 9/11 was God's retribution because we allow homosexuality. That bunch, yeah, I understand.
You know, they say everybody does it, so what?
Yeah. Yeah, or man's nature is essentially evil, therefore you have to expect these kind of things, and therefore we need more police and more prisons and more laws.
One more comment. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Did you hear that the FCC is considering giving a contract to Howard Stern to be their morality censor?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
April Fool.
Here's what's going to happen. They're going to turn around. Any term or word they don't understand, they pass it through him.
I see.
If they feel defensive, then it's null and void.
There you go. He's the expert. Well said, Kim. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, I'd like to comment on a couple of segments of your show today. One is when you're talking about the metaphysical aspects and you ask the question, how do you achieve this?
Yes.
One point I like to, you know, your guest, I think, gave a really good answer about the whole thing of allowing, letting go, and so forth, and dying to oneself. I'm talking to a friend one day, she's saying, well, I don't know how to let go. And I said, well, how are you not driving your car right now? Are you trying not to drive your car? Unfortunately, our society doesn't know how not to do. We're always doing rather than just being.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's not even in our language. I find it fascinating about language. In Sanskrit, there are, and many of the Hindu languages, or languages that are spoken in India, Talu and whatnot, there are a lot of words to describe that state.
Yeah.
When I lived in Germany, I learned to speak German. I was amazed. There's lots of different words to describe different types of warfare. Interestingly enough, you know, there's all these different kinds of Kriegs, these different kinds of wars. You know, fast wars, Blitzkriegs, and Langsam Kriegs, and all. Anyhow, I think that our culture. Well, I'm not sure exactly where our focus is.
We just don't understand it. We only know activity.
Yeah.
And then the other thing aspect of that, I think one of the great disservices we've had is our understanding of the word will. A great moment for me was when I saw will as an attitude and an easy thing rather than a will as effort.
Yeah.
You know, it was just simply a disposition. You're just positioning oneself in a particular position of, you know, emotional state.
Yes. This is my will.
Yes. Well said.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
next point,
if you've got time, earlier segment about this, the energy and such, with your guest.
Yeah. You know, I love getting these guys on because it gives me an opportunity to wake up America to, you know, what they're really all about. Because they go on like, you know, CNN and Fox and whatnot, and they go on, you know, I mean, even NPR, they go on these well-meaning talk shows and spout this stuff, and nobody calls them on it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just an important, you know, public service offered by the Tom Hartman radio program to bring these guys on and take them apart. It's just,
yeah, it's most appreciated. One thing he said is like, well, the horse and buggy, look at, you know, in that evolution. Well, the horse and buggy wasn't supported by $100,000 tax write-offs.
Yeah, good point. I wish I'd thought of it at the time. Yeah,
there are things like that. And, you know, the only reason that I can see that really, well, first of all, every building on the planet is solar. Solar is used by all of us all the time. We've got to realize solar is here now. But
well, certainly all our food. I mean, it's all the result of photosynthesis.
Yeah, and the reason we don't have it, it's the only energy that once we really get into it, you don't have a monthly payment to the man, as they would say.
Yeah, and therefore.
Even
and therefore.
Yeah,
we can't have that.
As monthly payments.
We can't allow that. We can't have community power stations, home, people putting, you know, roofing tiles in their houses that are solar collectors. Are you kidding? We can't control that.
It's the only thing that's financially independent.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Okay. I appreciate it. It's, actually, it's not the only one, solar. I mean, there's wind in some areas. There's water in some areas. There's biomass. But solar certainly seems to be one of the most viable, particularly for the more or less half to somewhere between half and two thirds of the United States that doesn't live like I do up here in Vermont. But even in Vermont, I mean, there are solar houses all over this state. It's funny, when we first moved up here 10 years ago, we went shopping for a house. I mean, you know, you do that, you go looking where you're going to live, and we live in the city now, a city of 9,000 people. I mean, you know, but we live in town. But up until 3 years ago, we lived in this house out in the woods. I mean, way out in the woods. Our driveway was a half mile long and dirt road that climbed a hill, and which was a challenge to plow out. But anyhow, we told the real estate agent that we were looking for something that was not, you know, a normal house in the suburbs kind of thing. Yeah, show us around. And he showed us, must have been, I don't know, I'd have to check with Louise, must have been 15 or 20 solar houses. I mean, with huge thermal mass floors and big south-facing windows and curtains that were, in some cases, even electronically controlled that went up and down so that you'd catch the sun during the day and you wouldn't lose the heat at night. And these giant ceramic wood-fired stoves that would radiate heat for hours and hours and hours. And they were all made, they were all built during, I mean, they were all the exact same age. They were all built during Jimmy Carter's presidency. Because during that period, from what, 76 to 80, during that period, there were these tax credits and grants to do this. Mostly tax credits. You could get a big break on your taxes if you did that. And so everybody was building them. And Ronald Reagan, of course, took that apart. And now we are as addicted to Saudi Arabia as a junkie is to that product that comes out of Afghanistan. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho's on. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good afternoon. Number one, I really enjoyed the conversation with the propagandist with the corn syrup yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
The thing that I found so disgusting about that is not what she was saying, but the fact that they give her access to the school kids to say it.
Well, actually, she's her school kid thing is a whole different gig.
Right.
No, I really think it is. That's something that she's been doing for 20 years on her own. It's like her own little home business,
and she's
really into it. You know, so this
you were asking a question. Why isn't this whole thing about the Medicare thing getting mentioned of the Farmy relationship? Well, what is the number one advertiser on big media today?
Seems like
pharmacies,
outgunned
automobiles.
Yeah, all
and
these
advertising works.
All these drug ads.
Why else does Archer Daniels try to sell soybeans to us? I've never in my life gone out and bought a
Well, I can tell you, I can tell you why ADM is advertising. Well, I can't tell you why. I mean, I can't read their minds, but I can tell you what it looks to me like why ADM and companies like them are advertising, particularly on NPR. Why they're sponsoring National Public Radio is because they're tired of being the butts of investigative journalism.
Okay. I thought they were trying to sell us soybeans.
Yeah. Hey, Roy.
Golly.
I got 30 tons of soybeans for you. It's like the Boeing ads, how'd you like to buy a jetliner?
You know, and again, I keep asking the question about the fellow that didn't testify about the cost of the Medicare thing. Where was the ethics lapse that he didn't have enough nerve to blow the whistle?
Yeah.
Or the fact that they insisted he, not testify or get fired. Where is the ethical lapse?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, ethical lapse and Bush administration are simply synonymous terms these days. I mean, it's yeah. And but just to wrap up the advertising thing, I say this about, I don't know, every other week or so on this show, and it was just a couple of days ago I made this point, and I think it's such an important point that one of the things that we have to teach our kids, of course, is how to have good BS detectors. How when they,
right.
If they see an ad on TV or they hear an ad on the radio or they see something in the newspaper or they see an embedded ad in their school textbooks, and yes, they are there now, for brand name products, that they immediately say to themselves, somebody is paying to try to influence me, and then ask themselves the question, what would they want out of this? What are they trying to get for their money? Usually it's pretty obvious. Procter & Gamble goes on and they say, hey, we've got this wonderful new house cleaning product, but buy Tide, it'll make your laundry whiter. Well, that's okay, great, they want us to buy Tide and they say it's going to make our laundry whiter. But I don't see anybody asking the question. And, forgive the redundancy of this rant. I know you've heard this before.
Oh, no.
But I don't see anybody asking the question, why are some of the people who support public radio and public television in this country doing it? And people who in the past have been the victims, in quotes, of investigative journalism. And why are giant oil companies and Halliburton and giant defense contractors advertising on news shows like on CNN? CNN is just carpet bombed right now with these ads. What are they getting for that?
And when the advertising dollars hit, I get so irritated when somebody says, "Well, nobody's ever told me not to report on this story." If you're smart enough to get that job, you're smart enough to know what not to say.
Yeah, it's called "Don't bite the hand that feeds you."
That's right. So anyway, I enjoy the show and just keep hitting it.
Okay, thank you, Roy.
Yes, sir. Before you go, Kim said it was scary. The scary part is that 25% of the people believe this end of the time stuff. And I emailed you an article from The Guardian about this LaHaye thing.
Yeah.
Take a look at that.
Oh, those books.
I mean, it was wilder than I thought it was.
Those Left Behind books are the most
widely read fiction last year
in America. Yeah, they aroused me to sufficient curiosity that I went out and bought the first of the series and read about a third of it just to find out what all these the fundamentalists were going on and on about. And it's a very bizarre worldview. And then you get back to I wrote about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight back 7 years ago. The book, by the way, is shipping next month, a new edition, new and improved. Shameless plug there. Anyhow, that Ronald Reagan turned to I believe it was the Prime Minister of Israel, it might have been the Ambassador from Israel, and at a state function, and this was, caught on tape, and said something to the effect of, I don't have the quote right in front of me, as I said, it's in the book, said something to the effect of, I believe these are the last times it's going to happen in your country on the plain of Armageddon there, and it's going to be the beginning of the end of the world. And James Watt, and this is in my book as well, James Watt, when he was asked, why should we sell off the assets of the Western lands to the lowest bidder? I mean, why should we be selling, for literally, for $20, $30 an acre, land that has literally millions of dollars of gold underneath it or oil underneath it? Why should we be doing that? He said, well, Jesus is coming any day now, and it won't matter. Well, it's fine. Jesus may be coming any day now. I hope so, but it still matters.
Good world to come to.
Yeah, it still matters, and I think he would think so too. It's the Tom Hartman Radio. Thanks, Roy, for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio program. 10 minutes before the hour.
are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The oceans are massive and seemingly unmanageable, but an author argues for a piecemeal approach. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The world beneath the ocean is a lot like the land above it, and seeing it that way can help us figure out how to conserve marine life, according to author Rod Fujita.
While the ocean appears to be vast and imperturbable, it's really made up of habitats and living communities, just like the land is. So the same rationale applies to the ocean as does to the land. There are special places. There are vulnerable species in the ocean just as there are on land. So the same kind of conservation ethic should guide our actions in the ocean.
Fujita has written a new book called Heal the Ocean, Solutions for Saving Our Seas. He says while the ocean is an enormous shared resource, we can help it by focusing on its parts. For example, coral reefs. Many of these habitats are suffering from a phenomenon known as bleaching. They're turning white as colorful colonies of algae and other life forms die out due to pollution and warming seawater. Fujita says we might not be able to curb global warming in the short run, but he says reducing pollution, overfishing, and other stresses could help coral reefs recover.
Coral reefs, when you remove the other stresses to them, may have an enhanced capacity to cope with the stress of climate change. I've been out in the South Pacific and in other parts of the world, and I've seen coral reefs come back from tremendous natural disasters like volcanic explosions and huge storms that break off the corals. As long as we're not polluting those or overfishing them, they do have a tremendous resilience and ability to recover.
Fujita says it's not too late to save coral reefs and other marine ecosystems. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I know it's my duty to spend and to buy, to prove to Bin Laden I'll shop till I die. I'm a world-class consumer, I'm sure of my role. I vote with my dollars for corporate control. I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flag's on the counter for sale. We're all made in China by prisoners in jail.
And welcome back. You're in the No Boring Zone. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Hey, did you see the... We have a new weapons inspector. This is quite interesting. Charles Dulfer. D-E-U-L-F-E-R. Charles Dulfer. And he's been on the press. You know, he's been doing the circuit. And talking about how we're going to go in there and we're going to look around and we're going to see what's there. And interestingly, and I haven't heard anybody call him on this, which is particularly fascinating to me. He says, here's a quote: "Ultimately, what we want is a comprehensive picture." Well, all you need is a camera, Charlie. Anyhow. Ultimately, what we want is a comprehensive picture, not just simply answering questions. No, we don't want to answer questions. We don't want to know the answers to those questions. Were there weapons? Were there not weapons? This is a verbatim quote, our new weapons inspector. Ultimately, what we want is a comprehensive picture, not just simply answering questions, were there weapons or were there not weapons? He goes on to say, "The hunt will go on until we're able to draw a firm and confident picture." Wait a second. Did he say draw a picture? He's not going to take a picture. He's going to draw a picture? The hunt will go on until we're able to draw a firm and confident picture of what the programs were. Do you remember George Bush when he was whipping us up for war, saying that these guys have got programs? I don't recall it. And anyhow, back to Charles. "The hunt will go on until we're able to draw a firm and confident picture of what the programs were and where the regime was headed with respect to them. We are now looking for the intention to make weapons of mass destruction. We've got this guy on a search for mind reading, and he's going to draw a picture for us. Aren't you reassured? I know I am. Thanks, Louise, for producing a great show today. Thank you to our callers for calling in. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for participating. Thanks to our advertisers. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York City for handling our music so well and so eloquently. And thank you in particular for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.